Oh, turn it up. Got your icon pass, powder slash it. 50 plus destinations. Speaking of, did you get your icon pass yet, Sean?
I'm on iconpass.com dropping in right now. Wow, from just $259 adult? Okay, done.
Jackery Solar Generator 3000 Pro gives you more freedom to roam. With an ultra-large capacity and rapid solar charging capabilities, you've never experienced dry camping quite like this. Discover how affordable portable solar power transforms your RV and camping experiences today. And we're slashing its price by $399 for a limited time only. Go to Jackery.com for more.
Hello, everybody. I'm Ed Robinson, and welcome to another exciting edition of The Robinson Show. On the program, I have Roxy Safai. Roxy is a true Renaissance woman and a Jill of all trades. She is the host of the Black Belt Beauty Radio podcast. The podcast is designed to help people achieve their dreams and excel in various fields of life. Also, the podcast empowers viewers and listeners with authenticity, inspirational messages, words of wisdom, and real-life situations that they can apply to their everyday lives. In addition, she has earned a certificate in neuroscience and has done extensive studies in sociology, psychology, and philosophy. On the program, we discuss her upbringing, her introduction to sports, getting involved in mixed martial arts, the study of neuroscience. Also, we talk about the Black Belt Beauty Radio podcast and much more. Roxy is coming up after the break. Stay tuned. You're listening to The Robinson Show.
Mobile phone companies say they offer home internet, but if their internet comes from a cell phone network, you should know it's just phone internet, not home internet. Keep your home up to speed with Cox. Cox internet is faster and has more reliable download speeds than 5G home internet. Cox is the real home internet you're looking for. Based on Cox analysis of Ookla speed test intelligence data Q3 2022 and Cox serviceable areas. Visit cox.com/internet for details.
Oh, turn it up. Got your icon pass, power slash it. 50 plus destinations. Speaking of, did you get your icon pass yet, Sean?
I'm on iconpass.com dropping in right now. Wow, from just $259 adult? Okay, done.
Oh, turn it up. Got your icon pass, power slash it. 50 plus destinations. Speaking of, did you get your icon pass yet, Sean?
I'm on iconpass.com dropping in right now. Wow, from just $259 adult? Okay, done.
Oh, turn it up. Here we go. Up here with the crew, winning awesome view. Everything you love, Zach, right in front of you. Got your icon pass, power slash it. 50 plus destinations. Speaking of, did you get your icon pass yet, Sean?
I'm on iconpass.com dropping in right now. Wow, from just $259 adult? Everyone knows you get the best price in the spring.
Yeah, that's the good stuff.
Okay, done. That's the good stuff. Yeah, it's
the good stuff. Woo! Oh, turn it up. Got your icon pass, power slash it. 50 plus destinations. Speaking of, did you get your icon pass yet, Sean?
I'm on iconpass.com dropping in right now. Wow, from just $259 adult? Okay, done.
Oh, turn it up. Got your icon pass, power slash it. 50 plus destinations. Speaking of, did you get your icon pass yet, Sean?
I'm on iconpass.com dropping in right now. Wow, from just $259 adult? Okay, done.
Raising Cane's founder Todd Graves is interviewing game changers to find their secrets of success.
I was just trying to do something that I love and be there for my child.
Secret Sauce with Todd Graves. New episodes Saturdays at 1 on A&E.
Welcome to Black Belt Beauty Radio, a podcast fueled by a passion to support your journey in developing your most beautiful and optimal performance in life. Each episode is driven with the intention to elevate your mind. When we elevate our mind, we elevate our life. So get ready. It's time to rise.
Hey, what's up, you guys? Welcome back to another episode of Black Belt Beauty Radio. You know, vulnerability is a really, really important emotion that every single one of us is feeling throughout our lives in many different ways. And I often, you know, my all of my work is centered in empowerment, right? Self-mastery, right? So lots of self-regulation, you know, the self-talk, all of the content, the writing, everything is always coming with this strength, right? With a lot of courage, confidence, like that energy, right? And a lot of times, you know, it could be interpreted from some individuals as, you know, there's like a lack of vulnerability, right? When you're exuding a lot of strength, you are not necessarily exuding or living from a very vulnerable place.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the program. That audio was courtesy of the Black Belt Radio Weekly Podcast, courtesy of the official YouTube channel set up by Roxy Safai, where she's telling you about vulnerability and how it can help you beat your challenges in life. And definitely the Black Belt Radio Podcast is dedicated to empowering people to reach their highest potential. And certainly she has lived up to her highest potential thus far and still continuing to do so. And speaking of which, we want to welcome her to the program, where she is the host of the Black Belt Beauty Podcast. And we're also going to talk to her about her upbringing, also being involved in mixed martial arts, amongst other things. Let's welcome her to the program. She is the host of the Black Belt Beauty Radio Podcast, Roxy Safai. Hey, Roxy, welcome to the program.
Hey, Ed, thank you for the intro. Happy to be here.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us on the program. So, of course, every story has an upbringing. What was your upbringing like, and where did you grow up?
Yeah, well, primarily California. I am one of five siblings, so older sister, three brothers, and important to reference them because our family life was, yeah, we moved around a bit. We started in Northern California, but at a very young age, moved down to Los Angeles, beach cities, and pretty much parked it there for a while. But I left in my late teens after high school and would adopt several different homes, Hawaii, different islands of Hawaii, and then New York City, moved to Europe, and back to New York, and then Los Angeles. But yeah, my early childhood years, primarily Northern California, and mostly Southern California. And yeah, there's a lot to say. Yeah.
Yeah, indeed, it is a lot to say. And I just kind of want to stay with this nomadic lifestyle that you had going from Northern California to Southern California, and then, as you mentioned, in your late teens, going from Hawaii to New York City and Paris. What were some of the experiences that you took from your upbringing going from Northern California to Southern California, and then by the time you hit your late teens, living in places such as Hawaii, New York City, and Paris?
Yeah, well, you know, the big move when we were younger was, you know, our parents separated. And so we started off, you know, we were with my father in Northern California, but ended up merging down to Southern California, where my mom had moved to live. And so, you know, my childhood was, there was a lot of hardship, right? So a lot of what I teach about, speak about, write about, coach about, you know, everything from self-mastery, empowerment, you know, is derived from real life hardship, right? And, but we also, me and my siblings, I mean, we had a beautiful upbringing as well in so many ways. And one aspect of that has absolutely influenced my entire life still to this day is the athletic part of our journey. So, you know, when I was a very, very young girl, I had the aspirations to become an Olympian. I was a runner. I ran track and cross country. And, you know, that would eventually fade, when I started surfing in my early teen years. But the fundamentals and the intangibles of sport, and specifically, you know, with the aspiration to be an Olympian, that really stuck, you know, and it still affects my entire lifestyle, how I move, because I'm sure that you know very well, you speak to so many athletes, but the intangibles are everything. You know, they transfer to so many different areas of your life, you know, discipline, focus, your mindset, you know, reaching for that extra 1%, you know, better. So, you know, it's a real high performance life. So, you know, that was really embedded into me and really like reaching for greatness. It was this exposure to greatness that my father did a good job presenting to me and my siblings at a very young age. And not even just athletes, but I mean, artists, engineers, I mean, you know, authors, poets, you know, he did a really good job at, you know, sharing what greatness looks like through the expression of, you know, individuals, right? And it was just something that I felt within me, that kind of feeling, you know, when you're watching somebody like, man, Rocky's been a life hero, my friend, you know, childhood to this day. And, you know, whoever that is for you, when you're watching some kind of athlete, whether it's cinematic or it's real life, and that feeling you have inside, that was something that I felt at a very young age within me. Like, I have this in me, and I want to do something with this, you know. But the other interesting part to my sort of DNA and my spiritual makeup and really, like, my mindset and everything is that I am an artist. So, you know, while the discipline, the focus, the edge factor was so embedded and so potent and so honored within me, so was the dreamer in me, the visionary, the artist, the lover of poetry and curve and, you know, the abstract, if you will, you know, the irrational, not just the rational. So it's ultimately what has really allowed me to cultivate such a diverse life where I've had so many different experiences, whether, you know, not just my living environments, like, you know, moving from, like I mentioned, you know, Hawaii to New York, which is completely contrasting, but then also, you know, just even in career aspects as well. I've never ever been able to understand how you can put yourself in a box. It just never made sense to me because I've always had so many interests. So while I grew up with my brothers and my sister, but my brothers, you know, we were like hard up on martial arts, blood sport, like, you know, just we were in it, right? At the same time, I deeply loved music, poetry, and I've been writing since I was a very young girl. So that diversity, and it's really, you know, this, for me, it's this beautiful blend of masculine and feminine energies, just very active and very harmonious throughout my life, has really just allowed me to explore the various parts of me and specifically all of the interests that I have, which, you know, it ranges from neuroscience to philosophy. And it's just, yeah, so that's a lot, but I mean, I say all that because, A, it's very real, but also, you know, nothing in my life, and I don't think anybody's life is linear, but certainly in my life, I didn't have this childhood, you go to school, then you go to college, and then you get the job, and then you, no. I have been a maverick from a very young age. I've, you know, just naturally felt so confident that I was like in my authentic self, and that didn't set up an easy life for me, but it was the only expression of me that I was willing to create my life with. And I can expand on that later if you'd like, but I'll give you a moment to step in because that was a lot.
Oh, no, that was perfect. Thank you for explaining that. And just to what I just wanted to touch bases on, you mentioned about Rocky. Rocky is my favorite movie of all time, and definitely Sylvester Stallone really struck a chord in what he did in terms of just the power of perseverance. I mean, yeah, it's cool to win a title and whatnot, but I think the true meaning of that movie is just about the power of perseverance and never giving up. So definitely everybody has that Rocky story or some type of sentiment related to Rocky. I just want to stay, I mean, we're going to get more into the athletics and, of course, with the neuroscience and the arts in just a little bit. But I want to stay just with this nomadic lifestyle that with going from Northern California to Southern California and then going from Hawaii to New York City and Paris. All of those cities are very unique in their own special ways. Mm-hmm. But the tempos and the pace of living are also different as well. Do you think having that different paces of living, do you think it's prepared you for not just what you do in terms of podcasting, but also talking to different walks of life and with your art career?
Nailed it, 1,000%. People make the world go round. The more that you, the stronger your social intelligence, I believe, the farther you go. You know, it's, and the diversity, you know, of living in all these different places and how you perfectly put it, you know, the pace being so different. I mean, culture, you know, being different. I lived on the North Shore of Kauai. There was no streetlights. So to move, you know, from there and then, you know, to have to be living and running New York City, like running in it, you know, just it. I mean, that right there is so contrasting and so there was just so much to offer in terms of like me learning human potential behavior, also especially learning about myself, right? Because when you put yourself in a new environment, I mean, there's new stimuluses, right? And so how do you respond to that, right? And that sort of became a bit of an addiction. And it really ties back to this, like, the potential piece, right? Because if you stay in one spot, how much change can you really gain from just even an internal perspective? We need different stimuluses so we can respond. We can learn how to respond differently, right? So, yeah, the nomadic life, you know, started obviously from childhood, and that was it, you know, in our, you know, I mean, well, it was kind of in our control because we made the decision that we were going to move from Northern California, me and my siblings, to go live with my mother. But then from then on, you know, I knew mid, you know, when I was in high school, I knew my sophomore year that I was moving to Kauai when I graduated. So it was very clear to me where I was going. And then, you know, I would live there for several years before I moved to Honolulu, to Oahu. And then, you know, and then I moved from Oahu to New York several years later. But, you know, the big thing for me about all these different moves was that I always just listened, you know, and when I felt like it was time to move, to go somewhere else, it wasn't, and everything just came to me in a way as well. I think it was twofold. It was like me being open and knowing that I was ready to expand, and then the opportunity presented itself to me, and it, if it felt right, which in these cases it did, it felt like, well, I wouldn't even use the word right because that's a form of judgment. It wasn't even right. It was just more of like a calling, like a knowing, like I got to go. I don't know what this means, but specifically New York City. You know, I had been there. I visited once, and literally the day that I touched down, I knew it inside of myself. It was a visceral feeling. I have it journaled that I had to live in New York, and it would end up being one of the greatest moves of my entire life because of everything that it gave to me. I mean, the skill transfer alone, character building, talk about like perseverance. I mean, New York will test you like I don't believe any other city in the world. And so, and I got tested, you know, because I didn't move there with a plan. I didn't move there with everything being so set up for me. No, I fully just went, you know what? This is what I feel is my next move, and I'm just going to go and see what happens. And it ended up being home for over 5 years and very big years of my life, you know, my 20s, where you're really shifting and trying to, you know, you're learning so much, again, about the world, right? So it's, I went to the School of Life, right? This is a university right there, New York City, the streets of New York. But, you know, also, and this is maybe an advantage for me, but because I've been writing my whole life, I've just always been a very introspective individual. And writing, journaling specifically, has always allowed me to see, hear, and feel myself. So I've been able to be in an honest conversation with myself. And all of these changes and all of these experiences from living in all of these, you know, destination cities that were so contrasting and offered so much, I was able to really metabolize what was going on with me in each of these cities specifically because I took to my pages every day, right? So, yeah, the moving, and thank you. I love the highlight of, you know, the nomadic factor, because it really actually, to me, is one of the greatest aspects of my life and really what has helped me to become the woman that I am today and to build, you know, the business that I have today and be pursuing what I'm pursuing today. Because again, it all comes down to your social intelligence, how you interact with people, and even just observation of humans, you know, like human behavior.
Absolutely. And it sounds like that you've gained a lot of experiences during your travels and even what you're currently doing right now in your business endeavors. And I wanted to stay with your upbringing for a moment. You mentioned that you didn't have a linear upbringing, you and your siblings, and you didn't have the traditional model of you go to college, you get a good job, things of that nature. But if I'm looking at your upbringing right here, you come from a Middle Eastern upbringing. So this is a two-part mm-hmm. question. Where are your parents from specifically in the Middle East? And number two, mm-hmm. I know sometimes when a lot of the children of immigrants that come from Middle Eastern countries or African countries or any countries for that matter, it's always about the American dream. Do this, do this, do this,
yes.
and do that. It's a checklist, and then you're out in the world. So two-part question. Mm-hmm. What is your parents' upbringing in the Middle East? Where are they from? And then was it the pressure intense to go to college and chase the quote-unquote American dream?
Great question. So my parents are both from Iran, so Iran, but pronounced Iran correctly. And, so we are first generation. And, you know, my parents came to the country and really just had a deep love and reverence for America and what America is really built off of, what, you know, the American dream stands for, and not from this place. So we did not necessarily have that, you know, this is your life plan, you know, built out, and you need to do this, you know, go to college, go to this. It wasn't like that with my parents, but what they did do a really good job of is really explaining and demonstrating, hey, the country that you're in, that you're from, that you're, you know, this is the country that says you got a dream, you're willing to put in the work, you can make it happen here. And that was, we grew up very much, you know, with a lot of love and reverence for our country. And I love my parents for that, especially being that they don't even come from America originally. My father is absolutely, you know, he's really a genius in his own right. Academia, just like incredible human, like PhD, USC, engineer, philosopher, poet. Unfortunately, on the, you know, parenting side of things and on the marital side of things, didn't accelerate or excel in those, you know, those aspects. So, you know, there was, again, that was where a lot of the hardship was presented in the family. And so, you know, my parents divorced. My mother is a fighter, not, you know, not in MMA, but a fighter in life. You know, she's an artist. She's a fantastic hairstylist. But, you know, the what happened between my parents, you know, it got pretty critical because my father was physically abusive. And so my mom had to leave. And, you know, we really did have the sort of underdog, which I love the story of the underdog, and probably for this reason, but we grew up with that underdog, you know, energy. It's like we didn't have it easy. And in so many ways, there's so much beauty built into our upbringing, and some of which I've already mentioned, but the hardship was real. It was gnarly, and I wouldn't wish it on anybody. But, you know, there is something in psychology called post-traumatic growth. And we naturally, me and my siblings, including my mother, actually, we just happened to go that route. No one turned into a victim. Now, ask me why, I don't know. Maybe it's because we're designed to, you know, be in the positions we are. I'm designed to be in the role that I am and support the women that I support, you know, because that was my natural MO from the hardship, right? So, and the hardship was gnarly. It was real. But, yeah, so we grew up with that underdog having to deal with, you know, all of that. But, I mean, that I know I just took us a bit further than your questions, but I feel like it's relevant to the story. But, yeah, I mean, I can definitely – I appreciate so much being first generation. And I can appreciate it specifically because my parents did an excellent job at making – you know, at really highlighting what America is, you know, founded off of, and, you know, how if we do our part, that we are in the place in the world that will support you to, you know, create your big moonshot dream.
No, you weren't long-winded at all. Thank you so much for going into explanation about that. That was really beautiful. And again, thank you for that. And while we're talking about your parents' upbringing and where they came from in Iran, when was the last time that you and your siblings went back to Iran?
Oh, we've never been. No, you know, that's the thing. It's we grew, yeah. It's interesting because, you know, while there was a lot of the culture, my parents were very, almost I would say protective to make sure that we were very American. And I say that just because it's not like there was a dismissal of the Persian culture. No, we have food. We have, there was a lot of that as well. But in comparison to the norm of first generation families from Iran, oh, no. You would never even know that our parents come from, that we came from, you know, because our whole lifestyle and the way everything was cultivated for our, you know, for us, me and my siblings, it wasn't. It was never, again, it wasn't a dismissal or like avoiding the aspects of the Persian culture by any means. It's just that they didn't force feed, push, or they didn't make it all, you know, they really presented the American culture to us. And that's, you know, that's the culture that we grew up with. But of course, you know, there's Persian New Year, first day of spring. Like there were other, you know, there were certainly, you know, factors of, you know, the Persian culture that was integrated into our life. Because of course, my parents, they were not, you know, denying their own culture, and they're our parents, so they naturally are going to, you know, just be expressing parts of their. What comes natural to them, you know, as being from Iran. So it was absolutely, I mean, my grandmother as well, you know, it was naturally integrated, but it just, you could, sometimes I think when you are first generation, the parents really move their country to this country. And then the upbringing in the home is that country in your, does that make sense? Whereas like my parents didn't do that. It was Americans in our home with, you know, some like, you know, aspects of their culture, just because, again, that's where they come from.
It makes a whole lot of sense. So in other words, you and your siblings were, your parents made sure that you and your siblings were Americanized and make sure that you and your siblings were a part of the American dream. It makes a whole lot of sense. And
yeah.
Again, thank you for explaining that. And let's talk now about your introduction to sports. So while we were talking about your upbringing and your interesting lifestyle, you mentioned that throughout school, you excelled in track and field and cross country, and you had dreams of wanting to be in the Olympics. What specific events did you run in track and field?
I ran the 800 and the 1500. FloJo was my idol. You know, I'm 44. I'll be 45 this year. She was everything to me. And I just... I started racing when I was 7 years old. It was a 10K actually. So it was, we ran longer distances at first when my father first introduced us to running. And, it was a really fun, interesting journey. Like in the beginning, it was definitely, something where, you know, everything's brand new and you're learning and then you're discovering. I actually just was naturally fast. I was naturally good at it, you know, and really the majority of my siblings, I mean, we're all our body you know, types or mesomorphs, you know, we're built for sport. We're built for battle, really. And, you know, so learning how to run and learning that we were good was a really fun experience. And then again, you know, sharing with you earlier how my father did a good job of really exposing greatness and highlighting it. And of course, you respect your father too, so you see like what lights him up, and it, you know, there's a side effect there to us as well, because we, you know, we want dad to be proud of us too. So, but the whole thing just made such an experience for me where, you know, I really did have a vision of, I want to go to the Olympics, and I want to race, I want to compete. But yeah, it was short lived. But it was still a very prominent part of my upbringing for reasons that I even mentioned earlier. But I mean, just even now, just in the physical sense of what I do, how I train, like life is my sport. I'm an athlete. I'm not competing, although I do plan to enter some masters track events just for fun, because why not, you know, because sprinting is a big part of how I train. But the, but that portion of my athletic sort of like journey in the beginning was really potent and really did, I mean, it affected the whole trajectory of my life as well as my siblings.
What was the most challenging for you, middle distance or country?
Man, it's hard to say because I kicked butt cross country. Like I was winning. I was first. I was, so, you know, and it was the same on those, you know, in those races for track. I mean, I definitely discovered I wasn't really fast twitch. Like I'm not a 100-meter girl, you know, because I need to open up. I need a little bit more distance to really get into my legs and open up. But to be honest, I just remember being really great at all of that. I mean, you know what, it's interesting because while there's the physicality part of, you know, and just like actually having technique and all that, I will tell you that what always pushed me at the end was my heart. And that's not me just being a poet. So I did a really good job of just staying at the very top, like pushing. So maybe it's me and, you know, whoever's going to be second. But at the very end, I just had this extra fuel, this extra switch that would take me to the finish. And that was both. That was cross country and in on those track races. So, you know, what did I like running more? That's the question. I think I would say that I like the track just because, man, 10Ks are gruesome. I mean, I love that I was so good at it, but the training sucked. And it got to be a problem for me at some point where I was really trying to avoid it.
Well, you know, as they say, it's not about the size of the dog in the fight, but it's the size of the fight and the dog. And definitely, as you brought up,
yeah,
the heart. And that's definitely important. And you have that tenacity and that will to win. And I just kind of want to continue about your journey in running. You mentioned that your father introduced you to the sport of running. Was this something that he did for fun back in Iran, or was this an activity to America, or was it just something that he watched and he thought it was, he became an enthusiast?
No, it wasn't something that he did back in Iran. Not that I'm aware of. I don't remember him ever mentioning that. I think it was just something that he became, he was athletic, you know, or started to really be in the earlier years of my life, you know, did some competent, like Ironman and whatnot, loved to ride his bike as well, 10 speed. So, you know, I think for my father, it was a combination of wanting to make sure that he was bringing us into sport for discipline, for, you know, obviously the health factor, but then I think it was also this family activity piece, right? Because it was something that we would all do together. So I think, it, you know, for him, it was more of the enthusiasm he was an enthusiast of it, but it was also, I think, designed to really direct us from that discipline, you know, get into sports and also the camaraderie factor of just, you know, doing healthy things with your family, right? Not just sitting and watching TV. It's like, no, we're going to the track and we're running, like it or not, you know? And in the beginning, yeah, we were all like, yeah, let's go to the track. But there were definitely times later that would come in and like, no.
Well, definitely. I know one thing's for sure. You mentioned that the health benefits that your father brought to you and your siblings in terms of running and getting involved in activities that definitely paid off big dividends for you and your siblings. And another activity that you've been involved in for a while is mixed martial arts, or MMA. How did you get involved in mixed martial arts, and who introduced it to you?
Yeah, so as a kid, we loved martial arts, like I mentioned. Bloodsport, still one of my favorite movies to this day. You know, fighting in general, like Rocky, you know, right? So we loved martial arts growing up. And then what would happen is the Gracie family, so Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, specifically Horion, pronounced in America, people say Horion, Horion Gracie, who was one of the original founders of the UFC, his kids and my siblings in different ways. So my sister was one of his daughters and became best friends, and then my brothers became, you know, super close to some of his sons, now like brothers and best friends. So we naturally, it's almost like our families were really destined to co-mingle. And my sister was the first one on the mat, but the first real, you know, pursuer of jiu-jitsu, my brother Mike Safai, who's been a black belt now under Horion Hidon and Henner Gracie, for I think it's been 4 years now. He was the first one, and then my other two brothers too, Darius and even Aria, went in for a little while but had to stop because of he had an injury. You know, they started, and then it was something that I always, again, because I always loved martial arts and I loved fighting, but specifically martial arts. You know, we did taekwondo when I was in high school. I ended up blowing out my knee, had three knee surgeries, that's a whole story in of itself, from a really excellent kick that I did in the air. I just landed not great. But jiu-jitsu for me was so unique because it's the discipline that teaches you how to fight on your back. And if you can't fight on your back, you're vulnerable. I don't care how Krav Maga or whatever, with all due respect to every discipline, because I think they all have, you know, great important aspects to them. But even specifically as a woman, can't fight on your back, you're in trouble. And so the physicality, you know, aspect of it, and as well as the self-defense. And then there's this whole philosophy and art that comes with really all martial arts, you know, but jiu-jitsu has its own, you know, culture as well. It was just really interesting to me. And I was very fortunate that, you know, the doors were wide open to the greatest academy literally in the world, from my opinion, from the greatest of the greats, who brought jiu-jitsu as we know it from Brazil to, you know, Los Angeles. And yeah, so it was one of those situations where it was just the right time, and it was almost like I was just meant to go that route. I'm not a black belt. People think that because Black Belt Beauty, my brand, Black Belt Beauty Radio, they always think that. I'm like, no, I am not a black belt in jiu-jitsu. That would be incredible. But it's just to get your black belt in jiu-jitsu is a whole nother, you have to be so dedicated on a whole nother level. So I love it. I mean, it's definitely something that I intend to do for as long as my body will allow me to do. And I really cannot say enough wonderful things about jiu-jitsu, specifically some martial arts.
Well, you and your siblings, you definitely have the right training under the Gracies. I mean, that's a name synonymous with not just Brazilian jiu-jitsu, but just martial arts as a whole. I mean, man, they're no nonsense, and they're still definitely going strong. And I want to stay just with the martial arts that you study, and that's specifically Brazilian jiu-jitsu. You mentioned about there's so many disciplines and so many ways to learn martial arts. Can you explain to the listeners what is Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and what are the attack methods or strategies in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu? Is it where you use submission holds or do you use kicks? Explain that to the listeners.
Yeah, it's essentially grappling. So, yeah, submission holds are part of it. But it's grappling, you know, and you're wearing a gi or no gi. I actually really love no gi. But with gi, it's like now you're in jiu-jitsu and not just grappling. And, I would say the primary principle behind jiu-jitsu, if you kind of have to pin it to one thing, is leverage. And, I mean, that was the most beautiful part about it. You can look to Royce Gracie in the beginning days of the UFC. Why was it so incredible to watch Royce? Because he's going into the octagon against guys that were three times his size, three times more powerful, et cetera, and he was just, like, flipping them over, grabbing their arm, choking them out, and it was done before it even started. That's leverage. And that is, I mean, it gives me chills because it's saying, hey, it's not the strongest. It's not, you know, it's not the biggest. It's the one who understands leverage. I think, you know, I'm saying this the most and knows how to implement it, you know, at the highest level, right? And also knows how to stay very composed in the heat of the battle. That's important too, you know. So, I mean, that's to really just keep it simple and sum it up. It's leverage, it's grappling, and you know, if you're focused on jiu-jitsu, then yeah, you're wearing a gi, and there's, you know, chokes that you can do with your, you know, the gi itself, submissions, I mean, the arm locks, the triangles, these are some of those classic submissions in jiu-jitsu, and man, the effectiveness is incredible. It's really powerful. Guillotines, incredible.
Yeah, I mean, seeing some of that, it is incredible just the way they bend, they get them in an arm bar,
yeah,
and then the ankle locks and things of that nature, man. It's something else. It's a sight to see, I tell you that. And I want to just stay again with the different disciplines of martial arts. What's the hardest, in your opinion, that you've learned, Taekwondo or Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu?
Definitely Jiu-Jitsu. I mean, Taekwondo was a small piece for, you know, when I was 16. And again, I ended up, I don't even remember how long I was doing it for before I blew out my knee. But the Jiu-Jitsu is so, it's a puzzle. And right when you think you figured something out, there's an answer for it. And now you're back with the drawing board, which is actually the addiction. That's the addiction. It's like you can't get to the center of a Tootsie Bop. For anybody who remembers that commercial, you know, it's like you just don't, you know. But that's the addiction, because you're continuously learning. You're continuously having to use your mind and as well as your body, obviously, you know. And so I think that the learning factor, and then obviously the more that you progress, it's the best feeling ever, because it's so not easy. Look, I mean, some of the principles are, I don't want to say not easy, that they're easy to comprehend, depending on who's your teacher. I think that's always a factor. My teachers are the best in the world. Maybe I'm biased, but I'm sure a lot of people agree. Because they know how to break down the principles. And I think if you understand the principles, then it really sets you up powerfully. But I still think that jiu-jitsu is way more mentally and physically demanding to taekwondo in comparison. And I don't want to, and I'm not just trying to be nice. I say this truly from my heart, with all due respect to anybody who is, you know, an avid taekwondo practitioner. Like, I have respect for every discipline, because at the end of the day, it's what you feel real resonance and connection with, and all of them have tremendous importance to their specific discipline and the techniques. And, you know, I mean, wouldn't it be amazing if you could just know it all?
The more you know, the more effective you'll be, and definitely in martial arts is no exception to the rule. And While we're talking about the Gracies for a moment, I've got to ask you a lighthearted question. What's your Portuguese like?
Oh, non-existent. I can speak a little French. You know, I can understand more French than I can speak, but yeah. And so, you know, sometimes there could be a subtle crossover because it's a Latin derivative, you know, but no, I didn't pick it up at all.
Let's stay just with the martial arts theme for a moment. And you mentioned it earlier, the Black Belt Beauty podcast. It's growing. It's on YouTube. It's on different digital streaming platforms. And it's a podcast where it's all about helping people to become the best that they can be, no matter what field or fields that they're in. Just tell everybody what the concept of the Black Belt Beauty podcast is all about and how did the idea come about?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, Black Belt Beauty Radio. You nailed it. Really, to make it simple, it's all the content there is designed to help you live from your greatest expression, the greatest expression of you. I mean, that's where Black Belt Beauty, by the way, the name. So in my, this is just my, again, I'm a writer, so I get very poetic at times. But we all know that to be a black belt is the highest expression. It's the highest standard. So the play on the words for me is to live from the highest expression of you is to live a beautiful life. And that's Black Belt Beauty. And so, you know, the content, the guests, I speak with a variety of guests from all walks of life, you know, authors, neuroscientists, Olympians, you name it. Like, incredible, some of the best doctors in the world, poets, artists. And, you know, all of them have, they're all thought leaders, they're all, you know, elite, world-class experts, and they all have so much to bring to the conversation, whatever their genius and their focus is. All of, you know, I believe in my self-development is holistic for me. So the podcast is really a holistic self-development, self-mastery focused podcast, right? Holistic meaning, it's never been interesting for me to accelerate in one area of life. Like, let's just say you do excellent in your career, but the rest of your life is falling apart. Not interesting to me, right? For me, what's interesting is vitality, right? So your health, you know, is from an internal, not just like your blood work, but like your creativity, you're potent, you're inspired. You know, this is why I focus on vitality. So this is a big piece that's going to affect how you show up in your work, right? Yeah, kick ass in work, accelerate in work, be the best you can be in work or school or, you know, but it's that whole picture that's really interesting to me. And I don't see, for me, when everything is supporting each other, you're going to get the best result. And so that's why it's so important, outside of it just being my own interest and my own lifestyle, it's really important for me to bring the variety of topics to the podcast, and so it's not a niche focused, oh, it's just sport or it's, you know, no, because to really live from your greatest expression, you're not doing just one thing. You're not accelerating in just one area. Or if you are, you know, it'll bite you in the ass later. Like, I mean, there will be some area of your life that you've been neglecting that will show up later and, you know, be demanding your attention. A lot of times we see that in health, like burnout, right? So long-winded answer, but where it came from for me, number one, I'm just a very curious woman. I've always been curious, like I said, physiology, biology, neuroscience, poetry, philosophy, astronomy. I mean, I'm interested. I'm curious. And so when podcasts started to come into my life, I started listening to podcasts. I think it was like 2014. So when it started to trickle into my life, and I don't watch TV with the exception of UFC fights. I just found myself just so drawn, always listening, because you just learn. You can learn so much from podcasts. And you learn also in such a unique format. You know, it's like you're listening in on cool discussions or somebody speaking that, you know, has something great to say or has an energy that you like. And so it's a different way to be learning. And so for me, you know, I loved the platform and I love the medium. I've always been a communicator. I mean, such that, you know, I would get in trouble in school for talking too much. And, you know, my mom even had to come sit in class with me once. And it was just so funny to this day. And I hope my teacher remembered, you know, like, here I am now. Communication is literally my career and it's literally shifting lives. I got in trouble for it when I was in school when I was a kid. But communication, both verbal and written, has just always been a natural gift, I guess, talent. But I've nurtured it. I've fostered it to, you know, even when I started the podcast, you know, it's a form of public speaking, and that was not a comfort zone for me by any means. I was so nervous, you know. But I knew it was – I sat on the idea for almost a year before I officially launched. And then when I launched, I mean, it was just – that was it. There's no turning back. I love it. It's a full production. We've come a long way. It takes a lot to have a real substantial show, especially, you know, you have weekly episodes that drop at the same time. I mean, and it doesn't stop. So, you know this life, you know. But it's a labor of love that I can literally see myself doing for the rest of my life.
I absolutely agree with you. I think podcasting is, well, if it has it, it's definitely going to replace music, because one of the beauties of podcasting is that it's long form and you can listen anytime you want to, and there's different niches and different topics and subtopics. So it's just a beautiful thing in podcasting. It just doesn't feel rushed like mainstream media. People can take their time and get their thoughts together.
Yeah.
So podcasting, I think, is such a beautiful medium when it's done the right way, when it's produced right. It's definitely mm-hmm. one of a kind. And I want to stay just with your podcast, with the Black Belt Beauty Radio. We live in a society mm-hmm. where there's so much ageism that's being practiced, and people are saying, well, you've had your day, it's time to move on, and things of that nature. So was this a personal experience that you went through in terms of just dealing with the whole ageism situation, or was this something that somebody else that you knew went through this?
No. So I've never taken a hit. To be honest, my physical appearance tends to always blow everybody away. Like, nobody guesses, you know, oh, you're 44, because, you know, lifestyle, when you're doing things, like, I mean, listen, I'm young. 40's young. Not supposed to look old and tired at 40. I get why people, you know, the tired thing happens, but I'm just saying, when you're really managing your health and well-being with reverence, consistency, you know, it'll show up a little different on the physical side of things. For me, what I have paid attention to growing up, specifically as a woman, I just, you know, the hiding of the age always annoyed me. I understand why, because I can see how, you know, the rejection that would come, you know, for women specifically. Men have it different, you know, it's like it doesn't seem to matter as much, but women, you get to a certain age and it's like, oh, you're irrelevant, you're downhill from here, you know. So I really love being a voice to say, and it's not like this super, like I have a, you know, I'm walking around with my age on my chest, like, hey, like I don't need to flash it, but I certainly will never hide it. And if anything, I am proud to share my age, because the word old after the number doesn't even apply to me. I don't even know what that means. I don't feel old. I don't look old. I don't live old. Strong is the word that comes after my years. So I'm 44 years strong now. I'll be 45 years strong this year. And how does that feel when you replace old for strong? I mean, first of all, your whole mentality of how you're approaching your life is different. You're just getting stronger as you carry on in your life. That's awesome. But aside from that, I mean, that's a big piece. I think it's important, and I really want to be, again, I'm not starting an organization around this. I'm just being honest and transparent. But I do love being a representative for women, for the young girls to say, like, look, because here's the thing. It's not just age. If you're hiding behind, if that is something that you're, you know, not being honest about, then what else are you not being honest about in relation to your authentic self, which is one of the core subjects that I speak about, write about, because it's very, very insidious when you start to, or at any moment of your life, choose to not be operating from your authentic self. And, you know, that would lead us into a whole other conversation, but the age is one component of it. So to me, you know, I want young growing girls into becoming a woman and even woman to this date, like, hey, own it, you know, because here's the deal. This is not a dress rehearsal. This is one life. And I'm living every day with everything I got. I'm proud that I'm still here. I'm grateful that I'm still here. And I'll tell you what, I'm not trying to be 22 anymore. Did that with all my heart. We're good. We're good. And I know the wrinkles will come. You know, things will slow down. Hormones are already real. Like, having to learn how to manage the shifts, it's real. But that's life, you know? And I think when you can really appreciate the authenticity in this factor of life and, like, and just really stand in ownership of, you know, who you are and where you are and in every aspect. I mean, this is true empowerment, you know?
Indeed, it is true empowerment. And I think you are just one of the testaments of just how age is truly nothing but a number. And it's not about the number, but it's definitely how you feel. And it's all in the mindset. If you're just moving, and if you definitely can shatter the glass, so to speak, and just continue to just live a life. And as you put it best, you know, this is not a dress rehearsal. You get one, so you better make the most out of it, and definitely just continue to grow and be sharp and continue to be sharper and just take on new challenges in life. And thank you for your answer on that. And speaking of continue to be sharp and continue to just grow, you mentioned about neuroscience, and we know that the brain is such a unique and it's a very complex organ in the body. We know that the heart is important, the liver, the lungs, and the kidneys are all important, but the brain is so interesting and it's so unique. What sparked your interest in studying about neuroscience?
Yeah, well, listen, when you are someone who's always looking for this way to become better, and when I say better, there's a lot that goes into that, at least for me. So this means, how do I keep my health functioning at the highest levels? How do I keep my athleticism functioning at the highest levels? How do I keep my cognition operating at the highest levels? How do I manage my stress at the highest levels? You know, all of that comes down to your brain, your nervous system, like understanding how much your brain, your mind, your thoughts, your nervous system, your recovery, like all of that plays into the picture, right? So for me, because I love psychology, naturally just love it, that I always have, you know. When I would say managing stress, knowing how to manage, like self-mastery, right, how to manage your emotions, for example, while there's such a, you know, a big piece of this conversation that lives in psychology, we cannot ignore neurobiology. Mechanism of, like, what's actually happening in your brain, dopamine, the fear response, you know, your nervous system. When you start to understand, oh, wait, for example, my brain, my nervous system is designed, like, I'm afraid of something. We're making up a story here. So, you know, you get all the feelings of, like, the heart, you know, anxiety and this, because we're hardwired to survive, right? So we can even be in a non-life-threatening situation, like speaking on stage, but yet our body's responding like the lion's chasing us. Understanding that is empowering, because then you have the tools. You at least have the pathway to start developing the tools to manage that. If you can't manage your emotional state and your stress, then it's going to be very hard to accelerate in these avenues that I just shared. Or really any area of your life, you know? I mean, someone who's just always being broken down by their emotions and stress isn't going to do great in life, period. So, you know, I always say, like, I'm so grateful for my interests, because I don't think you get to pick your interests necessarily. It's just like one thing kind of leads to another. But for me, the thread is that piece of how do I keep living from my fullest potential or to my fullest potential, you know, from and to, really. And neuroscience plays a massive role. Besides, it's just so interesting because there's so many factors that, you know, when you learn, and you don't have to be a neuroscientist. I mean, we have Andrew Huberman. He's one of the greatest neuroscientists out there who has done an excellent job of bringing, you know, like the PR of neuroscience has gone through the roofs just because of this particular neuroscientist, you know, and his ability to explain the complexities of neuroscience in a very distilled format for everyday individuals to understand and then apply. Like, oh, in the morning, get up, you know, and in the earliest parts of the day, get like 10 minutes of sunlight, you know, the sky. You don't stare in the sun, don't do that. But look towards the sky and get that light. Why? For many reasons. You know, what it does to your dopamine levels, serotonin, your melatonin. It actually affects how you sleep that night, the quality of your sleep, your mood, you know, throughout the day. So just learning something as simple as that is empowering. It's going to help you. Any time that you feel better, you can perform better. So that's a big factor. How do I learn how to feel better and feel in a multitude of ways? Because if performing matters to you, then you have to care about that piece. And neuroscience is a pathway to understand how to do that.
Absolutely. And what you do in terms of making sure your brain health is intact and you're still going strong, whether it be practicing mixed martial arts or doing the podcast or also just being, as you said, writing poetry and studying different things, you're definitely keeping your brain health intact as well.
Yeah.
And while we're still talking about brain health for a moment, supplements and vitamins, you mentioned about getting the proper sunlight. Do you, and aside from the activities that you're a part of, do you take any vitamins or supplements, or what does your diet consist of in order to keep your brain health intact?
Yeah. It plays a big role. I mean, food is more important than the supplementation, but supplementation does have a place for sure. My diet is protein-centric. I have literally, and I know that I'm biased, but she is one of the most phenomenal doctors, physicians in the world, Dr. Gabrielle Lyon. She's pretty well-known just out there in the media, social media, big social media, but, you know, her whole approach is muscle-centric medicine, and you know, the primary focus is managing muscle health, because your muscle is the currency for your life, longevity, not just longevity, but like how to live long and strong. So I'm very protein heavy. Everything is very clean. I mean, everything in my life, from my cleaning products to what I eat. So I don't do antibiotics. I don't do artificial. I don't do anything processed or anything like that, you know, whole foods. You know, and again, protein-centric, so I make sure to at least get, you know, the amount of protein that I need for my body composition, and also hormone health throughout the day, and it varies even through the week because of hormones. And outside of that, it's just, you know, clean, healthy fast, and some good carbs like sweet potatoes. I love sweet potatoes. Getting ready to eat them soon. And fruit, you know, berries, you know, cacao, like flavonoids, and, you know, just different antioxidants, just really nutrient-dense foods. You know, you are what you eat. And I always say, like, my food is good mood food. You know, people think it's just, yes, I came out, and I definitely was a happy baby, naturally my disposition for, you know, towards life has been optimistic and joyful. But I know the difference. I ate Taco Bell. Like, I wasn't always, you know, dialed in like this. I know the difference. I know the difference of my emotional resilience, specifically because of my diet and lifestyle shifts. Emotional resilience. How you manage stress. Excuse me. 100% your diet is affecting that. And that's just one factor. There's sleep and movement as well. But focusing on diet here. So supplements, absolutely. ATP Labs, that's my go-to. They are my number one. They are clean. They are, if you're a competing athlete, you don't have to worry about any of their products. Highly effective, highly effective. So all my protein powders come from them. But yeah, and then some of the most important supplements that I never cheat on, vitamin D, omega, fatty acids, so fish oils, creatine. And then there's some other, you know, for me specifically, like I love B vitamins. And then I also love adaptogens like ashwagandha and rhodiola, vitamin C. So yeah, there's different, you know, there's different reasons for different supplements. You know, detoxification is very important, especially as a menstruating woman. You know, you need to manage your estrogen and your progesterone levels, and that comes as a result of how you're detoxing. So I can get super sciencey. I have to manage that. But yeah, so to answer your question, I mean, do I value supplementation? Absolutely. But I would say that the majority of the nutrients that I'm getting is absolutely coming from my food, and my food is protein dominant. And, you know, a very, you know, low glycemic, you know. I mean, I'm not anti-carbs. Again, my sweet potatoes are smiling at me right now. I've got strawberries looking at me. I love it, but it's not, I'm not a heavy all-day carb girl. I'm also very strategic about when I eat my carbohydrates because, you know, food is information. So it's telling your body to do different things for different reasons. So I leverage my nutrition for whatever it is that I need. Sweet potatoes at night help you sleep better, right? Carbohydrates after lifting weights repairs muscle, helps muscle. So, you know, again, I get super sciencey. I don't want to bore anybody here, but for me, it's fun. You know, I love being the alchemist of myself and of my life. And, you know, there's certainly a big alchemical component in the kitchen because it's fueling you. You know, if you're eating foods that are depleting your energy, well, what's that going to do? I mean, it's in the statement. You're going to be depleted. You're not going to have energy. And here's the thing, Ed. This is maybe one of the kind of closing, you know, I can say this, like, listen, I'm here to live long and strong because I want to live as long and strong as I can. I want to have the most time on earth with my loved ones. However, in addition to that, I'm also, it's so important for me to manage my cellular health, which is essentially health, right? Your cells, you need them to be healthy. Because I have a lot to create and none of it's small. I'm writing my first book of many to come. I have my podcast that has a lot more coming for it. I want to make it three-dimensional and do live podcast events and, you know, there's other big things and more speaking on stage. And so, and there's so many other factors, but I mean, even writing a book alone is such an arduous task for even for me, you know, as a writer my whole life. You need energy. Creativity is a full body experience, and creativity is just one aspect of it. Then you have a business to run. And for me, you know, I'm not trying to, you know, go down with, you know, these ideas, these creative seeds that are so robust within me. They're not getting buried with me. I'm leaving them here when I go. That's the plan, right? Well, so your energy, I need energy for that. So it's deep. It's not just, oh, I eat this to be healthy or to be slim or no. That too. That's a side effect. Deeper. And I think that's actually an important piece to pull on just because if you can tap into the deeper parts, the whys, that's actually what helps you sustain and be consistent, especially when it gets hard. And even for me, I mean, it doesn't get hard to eat the way I eat. I don't want anything else. But just managing everything can get, you know, it's a challenge at times, lots of moving parts. But the why factor is so strong for me that I'll work it out. I'll figure it out. You know, I'm going to do my best. And I think, you know, and observing so many, you know, humans, not judging, just observing, and what, you know, specifically women have come to me for, like, it's so hard to be consistent. Well, my question is, why does it matter to you? Ask yourself that question, because here's the deal. If it doesn't really matter to you, then let yourself off the hook. It doesn't have to. But if it does, well, then dig deeper. And then when you get to, like, the core of why, then it's going to hit you in a different way, and you're going to show up every day for that thing. Rain or shine, you know, taking punches from life, whatever. Like, you know, your inner Rocky will show up. Straight up.
Absolutely. And as they say, health is wealth. And also you mentioned about all the stuff that you would like to do with, as they say, you want to live full and die empty. And that's truly what makes life worth living. Remember, health is wealth, and live full and die empty. And you mentioned about clean and being organic, as well as we talked about the vitamins and the supplements that you take.
Mm-hmm.
I got to ask you, you grew up in a Middle Eastern family, being of Iranian ancestry. What are some of your favorite Iranian foods that you enjoy eating from time to time?
Well, so the only thing that I really eat now, because, it's actually funny, it's called cuckoo, but it's a bunch of these herbs that, it's almost like a quiche. It's a bunch of these herbs that the way that they put the herbs together with eggs. So my mother makes it with avocado oil. She gets this. It's a very, like, it's a put together, like, variety of herbs. And then as my mom's cuckoo is literally, like, it makes my mouth water right now. I'm ready for dinner. But it's so good. I mean, the other dish that I don't eat so much because it just, it spikes insulin. There's nothing wrong. I'm not weaponizing food. It's just I know that it wouldn't hit me in the best way. Like I don't have that much sugar necessarily in my diet. So, but man, Fasan June, that's the name of it. And it's the stew over rice. Like a lot of the food is actually stew over rice. And the rice in of itself is like cake. It's just so good. But it's a sweet stew. It's got like pomegranate, and brown sugar. So it's like brown. It's so good. I haven't had it for years and years. But you know, on all the holiday dinners and whatnot, my mom always makes me cuckoo. That's for Roxy.
I learned something new today about Iranian cuisine. I never heard of cuckoo, but thank you for telling me and the listeners about that as well. And while we're still talking about cuisine for a moment, we mentioned about your parents' roots being in Iran. Everybody has their vices at some time to time. So what are your cheat meals? What are some of the things that you like to indulge in every now and then?
So I don't even like that term. There's nothing for me to cheat on. Like, I'm not – I mean, I get it, you know, and it's a common term, but, here's the deal. I just don't want what most people would see as interesting or tastes. Like, I don't want a big, I don't know. I don't even know what it is. Like, I mean, again, I grew up eating it, but like, I'm interested in, I love like wild salmon. I love dark chocolate. Oh, let me tell. And I have that every night. Like, so, you know what I mean? So like, I'm fully fed and nourished. If I had to, like, I don't know what, you know, so there's nothing to cheat on. I mean, I love and eat every day, like, big grass-fed steak. What am I cheating on here? Dark chocolate, steak, wild salmon, you know, macadamia nuts. This really is delicious food to me. So I don't know where to go from there, like, a Big Mac or a – no, like nothing's – pasta, doesn't do it for me. Doesn't – when I see food, I think of how – like immediately I have a feeling response to food now, you know? So when I look at a steak, it's like I feel energized. I feel, like, strong. It sits really well in my body, you know? A big bowl of pasta, albeit amazing – I've had it. I know it's delicious, but I just feel slow. When I look at it, it's like, oh, my body just feels tired. And again, you know, I've experienced so much, you know, but this is my journey. And it's also so important to say that because, you know, this is just what I know. And when I say I know it from a feeling level, but I also know from comprehensive blood labs that I do every 6 months. And when I say comprehensive, I mean, we check everything and my labs kick ass. So my food is literally doing what it's supposed to do. And then I just feel it, you know? So probably a boring answer. You weren't looking for it, but dessert. My girl, one of my dear friends, who's an incredible chef, and she makes all the best foods with, like, the ingredients that I love, clean, non-GMO, no vegetable oil. Like, any dessert that she makes, any food that she makes, period, actually, I will eat. Amber Cottle, she's incredible. And so, like, my birthday last year, she made me a big cake, and it was just incredible. It was really a piece of art. But yeah, so long answer again, but not that, I don't know, I'm definitely not, I'm a little boring maybe in that way, but for me, it's actually very exotic, my food.
No, that's nothing boring at all. And like I said before, man, when you're eating clean and when you're being organic and doing what you're supposed to do, is actually, what do you miss out on? You don't miss out on anything. I mean, you're doing everything that you're supposed to do, and definitely continue to do what you're doing when you're eating, in terms of with the grass-fed diet, and just continue to be clean and organic. And I'm definitely proud of you on that. And again, thank you so much, Roxy, for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us on the program.
Oh,
I know you've got so much going on with the podcast, and also what you're doing in fields of neuroscience, of course, with philosophy and poetry. And also, you have also made some big strides in the world of doing makeup. So tell everybody about being a makeup artist.
Well, that's my past career. So, that's a whole other, podcast, but that was where I came from. I spent the larger part of my career life as a celebrity makeup artist. So from the very bottom of the ranks to the top 1%, and then I just naturally evolved and merged into what I'm here to do, which is to be myself and to express all of what I express through the various modalities that I do, my writing, my books, my podcasts, and, other digital creations that I have. So, but that was a very important and beautiful part of my journey. It literally, the skill transfer of being a freelance artist is incredible, because you have to learn, that's the perseverance, handling rejection, and always, working at your craft to become better. I mean, it's, it goes on and on. There's so many factors in that career that, still play into my career now, that absolutely support my career now. But in addition to that, it presented to me some of the most important humans in my life, my life game people, So it was a very, very big part of my life, a very special part of my life that I will always respect. But, it had its expiration date. And I knew that midway through, I knew that there was more. I knew that there was more for me. And it wasn't coming from a place of not feeling satisfied, because I was actually climbing hard at that point and very inspired to keep climbing. But we all have an inner voice. I speak about it all the time. And my intuition just kept telling me, like, there's more. And I never pushed myself. And I never pressured. I never, it's that curiosity that I just let kind of percolate and, simmer within me. And, when podcasts came into my world, one thing started to lead to another. And then it all ended up moving in, the way that it did. So, it was not even that long ago. It was just a couple of years ago when I fully exited. But it's been about a 5-year journey where, the initial evolution out started to happen. And, it was a very, very special experience for me for so many reasons. And I feel very fortunate that's part of my life as well.
Absolutely. And again, thank you for expounding more on your time as a celebrity makeup artist. And let's just talk now about the current. What other projects are you currently involved in, or things that you're currently working on?
Yeah, well, again, the big piece for me is writing my first book, and I know that the cascade of books come after, because I already know what these books are. So, but this first one is very important to get out first. And it's really my biggest focus right now, outside of just consistently putting more into the podcast every single week to expand the podcast in all the ways that I envision it. So, you know, the writing my book, the podcast, a lot more stage speaking and, you know, collaborating, paneling with others, is also on the map right now. And yeah, overall, I mean, I just, you know, I have a digital community as well that, is really special. Community is very important to me, you know, and I very much love connecting with those who are in my community. I don't take it lightly. If you're paying attention to me, that means that you're, you know, you're, because energy is everything, and in energy is our time and our attention. And so, you know, those who are paying me their attention, and I know that I'm showing up and supporting them, but that it's that relationship is really important to me. So I really do my best to nurture my community and to, you know, put every bit of my best effort into continuously to serve more valuable content, especially in the world of, I mean, we just have so much content, you know, there's just so much out there. So it's really important to me, you know, just to, and plus, I mean, I do that for me as well, but just, you know, building community is a big piece. So yeah, writing my books, getting the books out there, taking Black Belt BD Radio to the place that I envision it, and, you know, just being out there more, speaking and growing my community and supporting them with all my heart. I mean, this is just simplified, but really the most important pieces to really speak on.
Awesome. And again, thank you so much again for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us on the program. Tell everybody where they can find you, Roxy, on social media, as well as any websites that you would like to promote. Let the listeners know that as well.
Sure. Before I say that, I just want to say thank you. You ask incredible questions. I feel how present and curious you are. And I know as someone who, you know, is on the other end of this as well, I know what that takes. And so I really, really appreciate this talk with you and the questions that you presented to me. So thank you very much. Where people can find me, so on Instagram, I'm really active there with my community. My Instagram handle is Roxy Look. That's an R-O-X-Y. I'm a Y Roxy. Roxy Look. And then there's also Black Belt Beauty. And then really simple, you know, my podcast, everything, books, everything underneath me that may be interesting to anybody listening, you can find under the mothership, blackbeltbeauty.com. Podcast available on any podcast platform, including YouTube, which is really fun. You can see the live tackles and wild hair in action. But yeah, I mean, that's it. Thank you so much, Ed. I really appreciate it. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Anytime, you're welcome. And I thank you so much for those kind words that you had given me. I truly appreciate that. And before we let you go, Roxy, you know, we have a lot going on in our world right now with so many distractions. It's people are just trying to find some place where they can hone craft or find new skills and new talents and abilities. I'll leave the floor to you on this. Can you give the listeners any words of advice or any words of encouragement of people to wanting to achieve their dreams or feel that they can't achieve their dreams due to unfortunate circumstances and they may want to try again, but they don't know where to start? The floor is yours.
Oh, man. Thank you. I mean, that's a big one. But honestly, it's kind of simple. And I'm not saying it's simple to do, but it's a simple answer. And I'm going to preface, before I give the answer, I just want to say this. I don't come from easy. I don't come from handouts. So know that with this answer that's coming, like I'm about to give to you, it's not coming from the girl who had it easy. No. We had a hard upbringing. There's a lot of beautiful things. But I'm saying I take punches all the time from my life, you know, and especially being someone who's like really going for it, you know, and someone who also is living, and this leads to the answer, but I'm doing it from my authentic self. No blueprint. Not living anybody else's life or anybody's idea of what my life should be. Never have, never will. And that keeps me on the ledge of my life, like ledges. But that's where everything that you need to live to your greatest self and to discover everything that's going to matter to you, that's going to create a life of fulfillment, lives. It's from your authentic self. So And it's not easy because the external noise, or even voice, if I want to be softer about it, because sometimes the external voice can be coming from your loved ones. But if it's not truly what you want to say yes to or truly want to say no to, then you got to be brave and you got to stand in your truth, because there's a reason why you're being called towards something. There's a reason why you have that deep-seated desire. Not the fickle, not a, oh, I like this, but then I'm talking about that inner knowing, you know, that calling, like for me in my middle of my makeup career, and it's like, we have more, you know? And journaling, I'm just going to plug it in to get a tactic, because that's what I do. Truly, it is the most profound and effective tool that will help you to first learn about your authentic self, then connect with your authentic self, and then stand in ownership and operate solely from your authentic self. You have to develop a relationship with your authentic self, and that's not going to happen just living in your head and not talking. So writing in your journal will help you do that. You don't have to be a poet. You don't have to be an author. You don't even have to have every, like, you can step to your pages, and some days you could just be like, I don't even know. I have nothing to say. Cool. Start there. And then watch what happens. Just start there. Because there's always something to say. But you need to give yourself permission to feel, to think, to be curious, to try, you know? And so, you know, if you're on the ground right now because you've been trying and you're like, how do I get back up? You've got to ask yourself this question that, for me, it's just one of the most potent questions. And when I share this quote, it actually went viral, but you got to ask yourself, and I say this with love, how much effort are you worth? Put it back into, you got to, how much effort are you worth? I'm going to tell you right now, that's that, like, you know, Ed, when Rocky's like down, and that's like a Mickey call for me, where I'm just like, get up. Because it helps you develop your worth. Even if you don't totally own your self-worth and feel substantial amounts of self-worth, asking yourself that question will do much more for you than you realize. So, yeah, authentic self, operate from your authentic self. How do you get to that place? Journal. That's my number one tool. There's other ways, but that's primary. It's the most effective. Ask yourself the question when she gets really hard, how much effort am I worth? And then see what happens.
Man, that was beautiful. Absolutely. And you heard it from her. She is Roxy Safai. She is, they say, a jack of all trades. But in her case, being a woman, she is a Jill of all trades. And check her out with the Black Belt Beauty radio podcast, of course, doing her thing in the world of neuroscience, also poetry, philosophy, and a true Renaissance woman indeed. Roxy, thank you so much. And if ever you want to come
thank
back on,
so
just feel free to let us know. Thanks again.
I will. Thank you. We'll be in touch. Thank you, Ed.
You're welcome. You're welcome. We'll be back with more right after this.
Welcome to Black Belt Beauty Radio, a podcast fueled by a passion to support your journey in developing your most beautiful and optimal performance in life. Each episode is driven with the intention to elevate your mind. When we elevate our mind, we elevate our life. So get ready. It's time to rise.
Hey, what's up, you guys? Welcome back to another episode of Black Belt Beauty Radio. You know, vulnerability is a really, really important emotion that every single one of us is feeling throughout our lives in many different ways. And I often, you know, all of my work is centered in empowerment, right? Self-mastery, right? So lots of self-regulation, you know, the self-talk, all of the content, the writing, everything is always coming with this strength, right? With a lot of courage, confidence, like that energy, right? And a lot of times, you know, it could be interpreted from some individuals as, you know, there's like a lack of vulnerability, right? When you're exuding a lot of strength, you are not necessarily exuding or living from a very vulnerable place.
Raising Cane's founder, Todd Graves, is an American success story.
Look where we came from and look what we're doing.
I'm just a fraca and cashier.
So he's tracking down game changers and visionaries to find out how they made it to the top.
I was just trying to do something that I love and be there for my child.
I got my first job at 15 years old. My mom didn't have enough money for homecoming.
Join him on his journey to find that. Secret Sauce with Todd Graves. New episodes Saturdays at 1 on A&E. Raising Cane's founder, Todd Graves, is interviewing game changers to find their secrets of success.
I was just trying to do something that I love and be there for my child.
Secret Sauce with Todd Graves. New episodes Saturdays at 1 on A&E. Raising Cane's founder, Todd Graves, is an American success story.
Look where we came from and look what we're doing.
I'm just a fraca and cashier.
So he's tracking down game changers and visionaries to find out how they made it to the top.
I was just trying to do something that I love and be there for my child.
I got my first job at 15 years old. My mom didn't have enough money for homecoming.
Join him on his journey to find that. Secret Sauce with Todd Graves. New episodes Saturdays at 1 on A&E.
Oh, turn it up.
Got your icon pass, powder slash it. 50 plus destinations.
Speaking of, did you get your icon pass yet, Sean?
I'm on iconpass.com dropping in right now. Wow, from just $2.59 adult? Okay, done.
Oh, turn it up.
Got your icon pass, powder slash it. 50 plus destinations.
Speaking of, did you get your icon pass yet, Sean?
I'm on iconpass.com dropping in right now. Wow, from just $2.59 adult? Okay, done.
Raising Cane's founder, Todd Graves, is an American success story.
Look where we came from and look what we're doing.
I'm just a fraca and cashier.
So he's tracking down game changers and visionaries to find out how they made it to the top.
I was just trying to do something that I love and be there for my child.
I got my first job at 15 years old. My mom didn't have enough money for homecoming.
Join him on his journey to find that. Secret Sauce with Todd Graves. New episodes Saturdays at 1 on A&E.
Jessica, this is the happiest day of my life. Right up there with the day I bought my RV and insured it with Progressive. Man, I love that thing. There are a million fish in the sea, which I'm reminded of every time I bring my RV to the lake, but I vow to love and cherish you just as much as I cherish campsites with full electric and water hookups. I'm so sorry.
Protect your beloved with an RV policy from Progressive. Take as little as 4 minutes to see what you could save at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates.
All right, everybody, that's going to do it for another exciting edition of The Robinson Show. Once again, a big special thank you to Roxy Safai, the host of the Black Belt Beauty Radio podcast. The podcast is designed to help people achieve their dreams and excel in various fields of life. And she also empowers the viewers and listeners with authenticity, inspirational messages, words of wisdom, and real life situations that they can apply to their everyday lives. And also, again, she is a true Renaissance woman, earning her certificate in neurosciences and being having extensive studies in sociology, psychology, and philosophy, and also being an accomplished poet and a writer. And again, big special thank you to Roxy for being on the program. And until next time, remember, put God first in everything you do, and you can't go wrong. Until next time, stick to the script. I'm out. Peace.